Week 15 was the week the playoff races were blown wide open. What becomes of the Eagles without Carson Wentz? Are the Panthers ready for a late season run? The Packers stay alive just in time for Aaron Rodgers' return. The Steelers and Ravens pile up the points, and a possible suspension for Michael Bennett after he tries to crash the Jaguars' victory formation. Ugly scene there. We're covering it all on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I'm Gary Gramling. He's Andy Benoit. We had a ridiculous monster week here. The NFC just got blown up. The AFC wildcard race is as wide open as it's been. And look, everyone's MVP favorite, even though Tom Brady is really the MVP this year, but the guy everyone was pushing for MVP is down, and that's topic number one here.
Number one.
We're going to start with Rams-Eagles. Great game, Andy, but look, the headline right now, Eagles come away with the win, but the latest reports at the time of our taping is that it's likely an ACL injury for Carson Wentz, and so we're talking potentially out for the year. Where does this leave the Eagles? You know, do they have we have a Vikings team that's getting by with Case Keenum. Can the Eagles do that? Nick Foles will be the guy, and do they have the defense and the diverse run game to survive this injury?
Well, when you put it that way, yeah, because they do have a diverse running game, and they do have a good defense. They have the best front four in the NFL, and they do they can scheme it up against you. They don't have to, though. I mean, they can do a lot of things defensively. Those teams that don't have to scheme, but every once in a while will. Which is what Jim Schwartz has made them as a defense. That's a scary thing to play against. So when you lead the question like that, I guess, yeah, everything's rosy in Philadelphia. I'm sick to my stomach about this, though. I hate this stuff. And I don't know what the league can do about it. The Eagles, if they have to play without Carson Wentz, can they still go to the Super Bowl? Yes. Is it the smart money? Not even close anymore. The big drop-off with Wentz to Nick Folk. I don't care that Nick Folk had great numbers for a little while there under Chip Kelly.
Well, first of all, Andy, let me stop you for a second. I know you love kickers, but it's Nick Foles, not Nick Folk.
What? Oh, did I say Nick Folk?
You said Nick
Folk.
Well,
I was thinking the kicker was leading him in. Yeah, no, Nick. Well, Nick Foles even
worse. Better. They have a quarterback.
No, that's right. He can throw better than I thought the kicker could. It's a tough. Here's the difference with Nick Foles and Carson Wentz. We always say with injuries, do you have to change the way you play with the guy who's out? And if the answer is always yes on a quarterback, almost always yes. And with Wentz, I guess in a technical sense, Wentz to Foles, it's not yes, because you can still call the same plays. The difference is what happens at the end of those plays.
Yeah.
Foles cannot extend the down the way Carson Wentz can extend the down, and that has been an enormous part of Philadelphia's offense. And Foles is slow. That's the other, you know, he's so slow in his release, his delivery, his mechanics. So you lose a little bit. It's going to change some stuff. You're going to lose some of your quick game. You're going to lose some of your running game as a result. He's not a read option QB here and there like Wentz can be. Yes, it changes the offense in a horrible way. We're talking about losing an MVP candidate.
Well, you look at the NFC. I don't know. There's no dominant team. There's no one you're looking at. There's no Patriots in the NFC, I guess, is the moral of the story here. But you have the Vikings led by Case Keenum. Obviously, they're excellent around Case Keenum. But, you know, this is not an unbeatable team. The Saints, the Panthers, the Rams, you know, whoever's going to grab that last spot, Seattle, I guess Green Bay's back in the mix at
Falcons.
This point.
I mean,
Falcons still around.
Falcons
yeah.
are the healthiest team of the bunch, and they're the ones that did it a year ago. And if their offense starts rolling, and it kind of has lately, and maybe we'll see more of that. You know, the Falcons could wind up being the most dangerous. We don't know. I mean, it's just a guess. We could sit here right now and just guess through all the teams and say, yeah, maybe them, maybe not them. All we can do is analyze in the moment here and now. The moment here and now is awful in Philadelphia because of what happened today. And they'll have to adjust and move along, and we'll analyze the team once we see how they've adjusted.
Let's talk Rams real quick. Back and forth game here. Rams were mistake prone. This was one. Lots of flags. Lots of officials getting involved in this one. Lots of post-play flags, lots of questionable sort of downfield pass interference flags. You know, Rams get they were getting it handed to them for the first 20-25 minutes of this game. Then Cooper Kupp made a play, big catch and run that sent him up on a score. They were still down 10 at halftime. Came back, got a punt return, or excuse me, a punt block touchdown. But they were not the better team in this game, and they still had a chance to win it, which I guess is a positive. But you know, that's it just looked like they're firmly on that second tier. You know, it kind of reminded me of the Vikings game, but the Eagles just sort of didn't have that knockout punch in the first half.
They're so well, I get what you're saying, and I don't disagree with it. They're so well schemed that, yes, they might be firmly on that second tier, but I think they're capable of beating a first-tier team on any given Sunday, as they say. I mean, they embarrassed the Saints, who are a quality team. They took it to the Jaguars when they played them a few months ago at this point. I hear what you're saying, and the other thing, if you want to make a case against the Rams, and this will sound bizarre, but they've had a lot of favorable big plays swing the right defensive touchdown returns. Today it's a blocked punt return. Look, you're making plays. That's what it's mm-hmm. about. History says that's not necessarily sustainable. Maybe it is week to week to a certain degree. It's not from year to year. I mean, those plays can be outliers and they can artificially inflate what you're doing. So they've had some favorable games go their way. And again, it's all created by them. But I don't. They're not a team that lines up and just stops you defensively very often, the way the Vikings are week in and week out. So they're going to be reliant on their offense. In the back of Sean McVay's mind, he probably figures if we get into the playoffs, when we get into the playoffs, we're going to have to score 35 points in those playoff games.
Yeah.
And can we do that? And we'll find out. They've been able to do it so far this season, but it's a different deal once they get down the stretch, and we'll keep learning more about them because their schedule stays tough for the next month here.
It does. And, you know, as far as the Eagles go, look, they retake the top spot, the number one seed in the NFC because of what happened in the game we're about to talk about right here. Topic number two.
Number two.
The Vikings go down to Carolina and lose this one. And this was... we'll start with the Vikings just because we are transitioning from the Eagles here. But this was a weird game for the Vikings. More problems up front with injuries in the offensive line. And the receivers sort of let him down today. Case Keenum sort of struggled with ball placement. But this was, I feel pretty comfortable saying, this was the worst game of the year for Thielen and Diggs, who they were drop prone. They were just not what they have been all season.
Well, Adam Thielen still had 105 yards and a touchdown on his worst game of the year, but I know what you're saying there. And Adam, I don't think people realize, you know, if I'm voting today, Adam Thielen gets my first team All-Pro vote, right up there with Antonio Brown. Well, not up there. Brown's number one. Thielen's clearly mm-hmm. number two. But those are the guys. I don't think people realize how critical Adam Thielen is to Minnesota and how much of their designs now run through him. And obviously their productivity. And in big moments, he's the guy and they build around him. And if he's going to have an off day, that will impact your offense, especially when your quarterback's Case Keenum, a guy who we all know is dependent on the players that he has around him.
Yeah, and you know, the other side of this, the Panthers, look, Panthers are 9-4. We've sort of been you know, poking holes in their game all year. We know the defense is great. And they've gotten back to the play that sort of tilted this game for the Panthers. It was a tie game late, and you know, they ran a read option. Cam keeps it, gets in the secondary, jukes Andrew Sandejo, turns a 12-yard run into a 62-yard run, sets up the winning score. And you know, ever since they went back to Cam running the ball, that's you know, that's sort of where they are. That identity that they had in 2015, it's sort of slowly transitioned back to that with a little bit of Christian McCaffrey sprinkled in at this point.
Yeah, and this is the paradox of professional football, isn't it, Gary? With Cam Newton, you look at that and you look at that play you just described and you say, how can you not incorporate him as the main attraction in your running game? He is such a good runner in and of himself, and then the threat of that and how much that scares teams and having to defend him as that extra body count for the offense if you're a defense, that is so valuable to the running game. And that's how you have to play if you're Carolina. We've been saying that all season long, but we just got done talking about Carson Wentz and the Eagles, mm-hmm. and now they're not going to play with their quarterback, and it happened on kind of a running type of situation. It could happen anywhere where you know that. Tom Brady had it happen in the pocket back in 2008, but it's what do you do about that? These quarterbacks are so valuable for so many of these teams, and Carolina's no exception. Minnesota is an exception, even though Case Keenum's played great. There's such a unique scenario in Minnesota. We don't see that very often. Quarterbacks are so valuable, and do you run or do you not? And I guess if I'm Ron Rivera, I'm saying, yeah, I think we do run, because without Newton's running and the threat of that, he's such a watered-down version of himself, which means we're watered down, that I don't want to say he's not worth protecting, because that's disrespectful, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He's not a superstar potentially at that level if he's not running.
Yeah. And look, you saw it today. And again, lots of big plays from the defense here. They overwhelmed this Vikings offensive line. And if you're a Vikings fan, you were kind of wringing your hands and thinking this is shades of last year when the offensive line fell apart with the injuries and just couldn't hold up. Not quite to that extent, but Case Keenum is a guy who, I mean, if you're going to get overwhelmed with pressure on every down, it's going to be tough to make it work. And he ended up throwing for 320. It was a labored 320.
Mm-hmm. And since we listed off all the teams who might make it in the NFC, we need to list off Carolina in that discussion, because that mm-hmm. defensive line has been playing like this every week for the last few weeks, quietly getting better. Mario Addison on the edges. He looks like he's 5 inches taller than he used to be. He's playing longer now. He's more comfortable. His technique has gotten more precise. Inside, Starlo Tulele, Kawan Short, even Vernon Butler has shown up at times when he's been on the field. Julius Peppers has lived up to what they were hoping and probably and more and then
yeah.
some. That's a good defensive line in front of the fastest linebacking unit in the NFL. And what you have is a team that can line up and just play, and yet they also still blitz you because those linebackers are so fast that they're comfortable playing with three linebackers back in space instead of four. That's a hard defense to deal with, and this is not going to be the last time that we're talking about them dominating a team with a good record.
It is. And really quick correction, Case Keenum threw for 280, not 320. I don't know why 320
so
was
stuck really
in my
was
mind.
That's why it looked so labored, Gary.
it was so labored, it was 40 yards less than what I said it was.
Number three.
Boy, this Seahawks team. It looked like after last week, that huge win over Philly at home, we knew it was going to be tough for them to go across the country and go to Jacksonville after that win. And, this one played out sort of as all their worst fears at this point. This was, Jacksonville establishing the run. Blake Bortles sort of making some easy plays, and look, the Seahawks got some big plays like they usually do, but like we talked about last week, there's the, when you have the inconsistent offense, there's the good, there's the bad. It was a lot of bad, and it sort of statistically evened out because of a couple of big late plays. I don't know what the Jaguars were doing in the fourth quarter. They allowed Tyler Lockett just to run down the field uncovered on a 74-yard touchdown pass to make this a game at the end. But I mean, this was sort of the worst-case scenario for the Seahawks at this point.
Yeah, because they had a lot of injuries. They lose the game, and I guess we have to talk about what happened at the very end and whether they're going to be without some of their best defensive linemen next week.
Yeah, and I mean, even before we get to that, Bobby Wagner was hurt today. KJ Wright was hurt today, so we're not sure exactly what they're going to have for the Rams showdown in Seattle next week, which is really, we kind of say this about every game, but it's kind of a do or die game for the Seahawks at this point. I don't think they can get in if they lose that game, but the way this one ended, shades of Greg Schiano. Jaguars got into victory formation, and look, the Seahawks, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, we all remember Super Bowl 49, which, I mean, that was emotional. It was an emotional time. You can maybe write that one off a little bit. There was an incident last season where Jeremy Lane took a run at Randall Cobb during a kneel down at the end of the first half, and today it was Michael Bennett taking a dive at the center on a victory formation play. Got some chippiness. Sheldon Richardson threw a punch and was ejected. So the conversation now is, based on what we saw last week with Juju Smith-Schuster, with Gronk, with George Iloka ended up getting his suspension rescinded. But there has to be a conversation. Bennett and Richardson, are they suspended for the upcoming week?
It's a very complicated situation. So I'm going to say a few things that I believe to be true, and some of them contradict each other, and that's why it's going to be hard for the league office. One, Michael Bennett does not have a reputation as a dirty player. Not at all. He plays hard. Mm-hmm. He does stuff other guys cannot do physically. No one's ever accused him of being dirty. I doubt he has any kind of history with Brandon Linder because they don't play each other. They play every 4 years, and he hasn't, you know, I mean, this might be the first time they've ever played. I'd have to go back and check. I didn't see, you know, we haven't seen every snap in these guys, so I don't know if there was any chippiness throughout the game and there was bad blood at the end. But if you're going to try to make a play on a kneel down, and that's all you've got left, they're kneeling it, I could see where it would go through a player's mind and kind of what with the Schiano thing a few years ago. I supported Schiano on that. Hey, make a play at the center. That's the guy with the ball. You get in, one of two things happen. Maybe you somehow get him to snap it up into his ass and he forces a fumble, or you get inside his head and he doesn't want to do it the next time and he fumbles it on the next snap or whatever might happen. You know, I don't even know if that was, I've only seen this play in isolation, but those are all the things in player. This isn't like the problem with Gronk. That was clearly premeditated. That was abhorrent what he did. And the more I think about it, the more I think he should have gotten more than one game. In fact, I said at the time, give him two and maybe reduce it to one on appeal. Mm-hmm. The Smith-Schuster thing's totally separate because of the post behavior, what he did after the hit was already bad. You don't want to see that, but that's not as bad as Gronk's. But standing over the guy, that is a very bad look. That's separate, though. This doesn't fall under any of those categories. Having said that, you have to discourage this because this will get guys' knees blown out. And I think what you do is you suspend Bennett for it, not because he deserves it per se, but because how else can you enforce guys to not do it? It's at the very end of the game, so there's no penalty for doing it within the game. You can't tell teams to not cover the center on kneel-down plays, because what if they fake a kneel-down and run for 5 yards at the end of a half or whatever they might do? You never know. I think you have to suspend Michael Bennett for this just to send the message to everyone else, and it's going to be unfair to Michael Bennett to do it that way.
I have 3 points to make. First, they might not consider Bennett a first-time offender here. A lot of guys received small fines for their actions at the end of Super Bowl 49 on the kneel downs. He was one of those guys. They might say, hey, we got this for you once. You didn't learn your lesson more than five. I mean, he was fined, what, $8,000. So, it wasn't really sending a message at that point. Yes.
He didn't learn the lesson because there wasn't a lesson then. That's a parking ticket money for reckless driving. You're not going to learn that lesson.
The other point, 8, you don't. What would a fine be for reckless driving? I don't know.
Well, no, I'm saying to him, I mean, that's another, $8,000 is nothing to Michael Bennett.
Yes,
so of course he didn't learn the lesson because you didn't teach him one.
Now, you don't agree with Schiano. You're not on board with that. I will just tell you you're not on board with that because it never happens. No, do you ever remember anyone screwing up a kneel down in the NFL?
No, but nobody ever defends them either.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you try. I would never condone trying to hurt somebody. And I'm not saying you take a shot, you send a message. It's none of that. I'm saying if you want to try to get the ball back on and kneel down, if you want to say, hey, we're not done playing, there's still time, we're going to keep fighting, which for every other scenario, we take our hats off for these guys. They kept going. They kept giving it their all. if that's the way you have to do it. And so, which is unfortunate because it's very dangerous, which is why I'm saying yes. The league needs to suspend Bennett, because that is that's your only course if you're a player out there on a kneel down. So the league needs to say their only other alternative is a kneel down is, it's like how they're getting rid of throwing the four walk balls in baseball. You just automatic walk. All right, give them the bases. You just call your kneel down and not actually do it. I mean, you could do it that way. And then the argument is what you just said, hey, nobody ever fumbles these anyway. But I think you're going to get a lot of old school football people up in arms if they did it that way. So I don't know what you do to protect players on the kneel down, but if I'm Greg Schiano or whoever, I'm telling my guys, yes, go after those linemen, because that's our only chance at forcing any kind of a fumble.
Nah.
Well, what's the alternative?
You have to give up. It's that line between gamesmanship and just decency at that point. But you know,
all right,
the NFL,
but let me ask you this. Hold on, yes. Let me ask you this though. Gamesmanship and decency. When you get down to the Super Bowl and they're on the 1-inch line or the 1-yard line is what it was really. Are you going to just go with decency then, or are you going to? I mean, that's
if you're talking,
so we've seen this happen.
If you're talking like that, then I mean, if they have to actually move the ball forward after the snap, then that's another story. If they're at like their own 5-yard line, no, you lost the game. But what the NFL needs to do with this is the same thing that Major League Baseball did with it, and you eliminate the play. Baseball got rid of the intentional walk because it's a boring play where nothing interesting happens anyway. And so basically NFL says if you want to concede the down and take 40 seconds off the clock, you tell the official we're conceding the down. If the other team has a timeout left that they want to use, they can use it. Otherwise, you just take 40 seconds off the clock and you do it again.
And you know what else that would do? That would help to shorten the games just a little tiny bit. And we're looking for ways to shorten the game. So maybe we've come to an agreement on that.
Yep, we had marathon games today.
So we're saying that they need to just get rid of the kneel down play.
Get rid of the kneel down play. I mean, look. To me, the whole thing with Bennett and with Richardson, look, Richardson was tossed when the game was basically over, throwing a punch. So do you know, a lot of the talk with Mike Evans was, well, he didn't get tossed from the game, so you have to punish him for the next game. You know, Richardson obviously getting tossed from a game where they're going to kneel down one more time, that's not really much of a punishment. So, I mean, it's the Rams game, and it's huge, but the other thing is, the NFL reacts when there's some sort of fan outcry and media outcry about these plays. And the fact that this became such a huge thing at the end of this game, and it ended with Quentin Jefferson's going off the field, and he gets a beer thrown at him and tries to go up into the stands. There was a lot of ugliness at the end of this game, and just like the Steelers-Bengals game when they got really aggressive with the suspensions, even though we see similar things that don't even draw fines during the season. I think this is one that is very much in the middle of the NFL's radar right now, and they love making statements and sort of showing publicly, look, we're doing something about this. You can't criticize us type of thing. So I think that's what we're looking at. I think these guys are, I guess we'll find out. Most of you will know by the time you hear this show, but I think both these guys are getting a game here.
Yeah, we'll have to see. And the Jefferson and Richard, that's all separate. You know, I'm talking Michael Bennett, the other stuff, the league takes care of that stuff the way they need to.
Yep. And by the way, look, Quentin Jefferson shouldn't be trying to go into the stands, but don't, if you're at a game, don't throw drinks, don't throw Twizzlers like Andy did as a young child onto the field, but especially don't throw drinks don't throw anything at the players. Really, don't interact with the players unless you're like, you want to ask for an autograph or something. Yeah, go for it. But don't poke these guys.
You need to come down hard on fans. You need to come on hard on fans, because here's what I'm thinking. If I'm a diehard, let's say I'm a Rams fan and I was at that game today, and that's, I don't want Quentin Jefferson playing next week, I'm going to throw a beer on him and see if I can get him suspended. I remember when Ron Artest went into the stands.
Yep.
I remember thinking, boy, if I were, who was their biggest rival at the time? Indiana, probably Detroit after that. But
yeah, it was,
you know,
Pistons-Pacers.
Yeah, but was it going into the Palace or the Malice at the Palace? Were they rivals already, or did it come out of
those
that?
Were No, those are the two best teams in the East that year.
Okay, so I'm thinking if I'm a big-time Pistons fan, I'm taking one for the team. I'm going to try to get Ron Artest to get himself suspended by getting him into the stand. You reward fans that throw beer on guys if you suspend the players for coming after them. I'm not condoning coming after players. I'm saying you got it, or you're coming after fans. I'm saying there needs to be harsh recourse for fans. Boy, we live in a – we just need to be punishing everybody for everything here, Gary, and everything gets sorted out that way. We are a couple of Russians, aren't we?
Well, look, it's a world full of a-holes. That's what we learned today at the end of that Jaguars game. Yeah, don't throw stuff. And by the way, nice win for the Jaguars. And Blake Bortles made a couple of big-time throws. We said last week after that Eagles game, we were both kind of frustrated with the Eagles not going after the secondary. Jaguars went after it. A lot of the usual, you know, play action and early down stuff. They weren't exactly just like spreading out and letting Bortles pick them apart, but yeah.
Well, no, but you play that's how you play with Bortles, and that's the smart. You got to put your guy in a position to succeed. First down play action. If you're a run based offense, your play action game on that needs to be your passing game. And especially with Blake Bortles, where he has such a slow delivery, you have to afford him a clean pocket and a defined read. Play action does that. And Bortles, to his credit, he's starting to play better. And Dede Westbrook, adding him to the equation, he's a better version of Marquise Lee. That gives him a little something. I think it gives him some intermediate weapons. He's probably better than Alan Hearns, too. We don't know yet. We have to see what Westbrook does as he plays more. But quietly, that Jaguars passing game, and maybe not as quietly after today, they're starting to play better. And if that passing game, if that can be a team that scores 20 points comfortably every week on offense, then that's a Super Bowl contending team.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice win for them, despite all the aftermath. And they're in the driver's seat right now in the AFC South, clearly.
Number four.
Topping number four right here. Titans go out to Arizona, and as I say every day to myself, strange things happen in the desert. Cardinals sort of completely shut down Tennessee in this game, and I guess the big picture concern, Marcus Mariota tweaked his knee during this game, and I think it's going to be a story during the week. He'll probably be questionable for next week's game, but what do you make of Mariota at this point? It seems like he's been disappointing because he certainly hasn't taken a step forward. They're, you know, lots of injuries to the receiving core, but after a while, you gotta be better than he was today. He was not good.
Gotta be better than he's been this season. He's had a step back kind of year, so especially when you consider the trajectory he was on. He has not stayed anywhere close to the trajectory he showed early in his rookie season. He's been a disappointment. I would even label it like that. It's the noun, not just disappointing. I think he's been a disappointment this year. I like him. His talent's outstanding. Too many turnovers. The interceptions today were really bad. Bad reads, bad throws. And the other thing that's going to make Tennessee a quick dispatch in the postseason, if they even get there, and I'm not convinced they will, is their running game is not very good right now. And it's amazing that they've been winning with a bad, or at least an average to slightly below average ground game. I can't believe they've been winning still. Their defense has done some nice things. They've manufactured some offense to kind of play around their quarterback, and Mariota does have some good moments. But inconsistent run game, badly inconsistent quarterback, you're not going very far in the playoffs when you're built to be a running team, and those are your two problems.
Yeah, I mean, look, everyone in the NFL is good, but they played a pretty soft schedule. Coming into this one, they had won, what was it, 6 of 7? The only loss being that Thursday nighter at Pittsburgh. The wins were home Colts, home Ravens, home Bengals, at Cleveland, at Indianapolis, home Houston. So it wasn't murderer's row. It kind of reminds me almost of what the Giants did a year ago. Giants are last year were a better team than the Titans are now. But, you know, this is a team that sort of collected the wins that they should have collected. And this one was tough because it is getting to the point where they host the Rams and they host the Jaguars to finish the season, and they go to San Francisco next week. San Francisco is a better team, than they had been midseason. So they kind of got to get at least one more win here, if not two more, to get to the postseason. And you know, a couple of weeks ago, it looked like they were pretty much a shoo-in.
Well, yeah, and you know what? You're right. You have to win these games, and what's it matter if you get to the postseason if you're going to be one and done and a non-competitive wild card team anyway, which is what they would be if they went in playing the way they're playing right now. So what we're both saying is Tennessee has to play better on offense, and it starts with their run game, highly complex ground game, and it starts with their quarterback. Those two items, bad items to have that are hurting you.
Well, I mean, has the offensive line slid back?
I don't think the offensive line is quite as good as people realize. For one, I think as a run blocking unit, it's pretty good. So yeah, it has slid back. It's been somewhat up and down. DeMarco Murray at times has left yards on the field. And then those running backs, Derrick Henry, as good as he is, and I think he's a dynamic guy once he has space and has room to rev up his engine. That's the caveat, though. He needs that space and that room to rev up the engine. So the offensive line, good's not enough in some degrees. They've got to be great and win immediately off the ball because their running backs need space. And if they don't do that, they don't win off the ball, then the running backs aren't going to gain any yards. And we saw that at college. In college, Alabama, Derrick Henry lost yards on like a fourth of his carries because he needs space created for him initially. And DeMarco Murray's always been that way a little bit. So everybody's underachieving there in Tennessee. And then again, it goes back. It doesn't help when your quarterback makes poor choices. And I believe the ugliest interception Mariota threw today, the one to Bynes, Josh Bynes, the linebacker, who's played pretty well filling in for Arizona this last couple weeks. But that was first down play action right into the middle of the field. It was an early down throw. You can't have that. You can't have that at all.
Yeah, Titans have some work to do here down the stretch. I guess, you know, I was just looking at them through the stretch and thinking, they can't play any worse. I mean, it's a young offense. They're getting some of their guys healthy. They'll get better down the stretch, or at least they have a good chance to get better down the stretch. And today was nothing like that.
Number five.
Let's go the Sunday nighter. This was entertaining football here. It's always good when it's Steelers Ravens, but I can't believe how many points were scored in this game.
And I emailed you saying we're moving Steelers Ravens up to number one, and then the Carson Wentz reality got the better of me.
Yeah.
I can't believe this game's our number five game. A lot going on in the NFL today, because this was one of the five or six most enthralling games we've had this season. This was probably better than that Steelers-Packers game we got the other night. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, I keep on looking at this Ravens team, and it's just sort of a shame. The offense is sort of getting it together. You know, obviously some of it's playing a Ryan Shazier-less Steelers defense.
Yeah.
But, boy, were they missing Jimmy Smith in this one.
You think so? I thought Marlon Humphrey played very well for them on the outside. Here's the argument for if they are missing Smith. If you've watched the Ravens all season, they've rotated Humphrey in. And the guy that really struggled was Brandon Carr at left corner.
Yeah.
Marlon Humphrey can play left corner. He has been rotating in. So imagine if Jimmy Smith were out there, he would have been right corner. Humphrey comes in at left corner. You're probably right. They probably did miss Jimmy Smith because they needed two cornerbacks in this one, and they only had one.
They had one.
And those,
and they gave
those guys weren't moving around.
Yards.
Oh, my goodness. I know. The other thing is how I would love to know how Dean Pease, their defensive coordinator, and John Harbaugh, how they feel about the game plan, because it was very distinct. They lined up everybody along the front, and they brought a variety of blitzes. They went on the attack against Roethlisberger. I kind of admire that. And I think it got home at times. It did impact. It did have the desired results. Obviously not enough, though. And if they had it to do again, do they go to just straight up cover two, which they've played a lot over the years, not as much this year, but it's still a foundational piece for them? Because they went after Roethlisberger, they tried to make it a chess match, and he beat them bad.
Yeah, and he did not, he didn't miss any throws. He didn't miss any deep throws. I mean, he missed one or two early on, but when he needed them down the stretch here, I mean, he was right on with Antonio Brown, because we've seen games this year where Brown will beat a guy and maybe Ben misses them altogether, or you know, maybe he puts the throw out of bounds. And, you know, this is sort of Ben at his best in this one, which he had to be because he threw 66 times.
You know, what they've done also early in games, they didn't do this at the front of the season. They're doing it now. They line up and spread formations. Often it's empty, but not always, but they sprinkle that in and empty. It's almost always Bell and Brown on the weak side together. And Todd Haley does that because he wants his smartest guys over there. They line up like that, and they just let Roethlisberger control the game at the line of scrimmage. And it's not the power running Steelers that we saw early in the year. They can still go to that. In fact, a lot of times what they do is the first series, they go spread empty. Roethlisberger directs traffic, makes all the calls, works to play clock down, and he's a field general. Second mm-hmm. series, they come out with Roosevelt Nix at fullback, maybe a sixth offensive lineman, certainly an extra tight end, and they just pound the rock. And that's how they play at the front of games now. And I think they've gotten a lot better since they started doing that. They've gotten Roethlisberger comfortable by giving him more responsibility early in the game. And obviously, at this point in his career, he can handle whatever responsibility you give to him.
Yeah. What do you think of the Ravens offense? I mean, more signs of life at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Alex Collins has run well for 2 weeks in a row now. And I don't know how to even analyze this because, I haven't been able to stop thinking about Ryan Shazier all week. And I had a hard time watching that play on film. I didn't watch the Monday night game, so watching it on film Friday morning was the first time I saw it. And, you know, his absence out there is a big factor. It's a huge – nobody – and as we shouldn't be, he's the best linebacker, certainly the most dynamic linebacker in the NFL, and that gets lost because of how much more important everything else is with his health right now. But you take away that guy, that's taken away their Carson Wentz in a lot of ways on defense, and it showed. Baltimore, I'm still not sold that they're a great offense. It's 2 weeks in a row they've played well. But the absence of Shazier is what stood out the most in this game, and Baltimore capitalized on that.
Can the Steelers team, I mean, look, it's the game of the year for them as far as the regular season goes. They have New England coming to town next week. Can they even, are they going to have to win that game 50-48? Is there any chance they can even contain a Tom Brady offense?
So I don't know. After we're done recording, Gary, I'm going to go walk around my neighborhood thinking about that and then dictating it into my phone and writing it down. I'm going to send it to you, and you're going to have to stay up really late and edit it, and it'll be an article tomorrow. That's what I have to figure out. I don't know. I don't know what you do with Shazier out. Something has to be adjusted because they have a great defensive line. They have a good edge players as well, and yet we saw time after time in this game, Baltimore kept getting around the edge against those guys. The plan is not to go in there and bang the tables and tell Stephon Tuitt and Hayward and Bud Dupree and T.J. Watt, hey, you guys got to pick it up a notch. Shazier's out. Those guys don't have a notch to pick it up at. They're already playing at a high level. So you have to play differently. Remember back in the summer, Keith Butler said, in fact, he said this about defending the Patriots. So now would be the week to roll this out. He said, in today's NFL, you got to be able to match up in coverage. You can't just sit back and zone the way we have. And they learned that the hard way in the AFC Championship mm-hmm. game. They got killed in zone coverage by Tom Brady. Well, they haven't really gone to a lot of matchup coverage. They've been aggressive, but they're still very much zone-based, matchup zone-based stuff. You have to help your run defense now, which means you need to bring a guy down into the box. Sean Davis would be that guy. Now you do need to match up, because if Sean Davis is not back in coverage, now your matchup zones don't work because there's too much area to be playing zone with that one less guy. So you could argue that the loss of Joe Hayden becomes important now, because with Hayden in there, they do have matchup corners.
Yeah.
Without him, they're hiding Cody Sensabaugh. I mean, they play him, then they mm-hmm. bring him out late in the game like they did this week and last week. I think that's what you do, though. I think you have to try to rely on your secondary, and I don't know if those guys can do that.
Well, we're going to find out in 6 days or so.
Yeah, tough week to find out. And boy, I feel bad even talking football about it because I just can't stop thinking about Shazier personally. But the other thing that the Patriots did so well against Pittsburgh was throw against their inside linebackers last year in zone. They ran Edelman over the middle of the field. They spread out and they run Edelman in the middle of the field. He's not there now, obviously, but they still have Amendola. They still have Rex Burkhead. Conceptually, they have Rob Gronkowski. I could see them spreading out and throwing in the middle of the field, especially now that Shazier's not in there.
This is Jim Miller, and Origins is back. Recently, I gave you a behind-the-curtain look into the groundbreaking comedy Curb Your Enthusiasm. Now, it's time to take you on another ride, one that's nearly 40 years in the making. Dropping December 18th, Origins with James Andrew Miller, Chapter 2, a deep exploration into the world of ESPN. In five different episodes, we will reveal previously unheard and unpredictable moments, pivotal junctures, and strokes of luck, good and bad, that turned ESPN from a ramshackle couple of buildings into one of the greatest media success stories of all time. You'll hear from all the key players, in front of the camera and behind. Look for Origins with James Andrew Miller on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you download your programs.
All right. So before we move on, almost 2 years ago, Ben McAdoo had his opening press conference as head coach of the New York Giants. And what's the one thing everyone remembers from that day? How ridiculous he looked in his ill-fitting suit. Nothing looks worse than a suit that doesn't fit right. But that well-tailored, perfectly fit suit, a suit that can be your go-to for the biggest occasions, it will be the best thing you own. And that's why you need to check out Indochino.com. You can go to one of their showrooms, or better yet, if you don't have the time during the day, you can get your exact measurements online. They have a step-by-step process with a video tutorial that shows you how to get the exact measurements you need. I did it, and I promise you, it is idiot-proof. Then you pick your fabric, choose any customizations you might want, submit your measurements, and place your order. And just this week, our listeners get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when you use the promo code 10THINGS at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit, plus shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code 10THINGS. Indochino.com, promo code 10THINGS for any premium suit, just $359 and free shipping. An incredible deal for a suit that will fit you better than anything off the rack ever could.
Number six.
All right, moving it along. Topic number six. Let's go AFC West at this point. Let's go Chiefs, Raiders, Chiefs back in the win column. Yeah, they got the run game going again. Last week they got the offense going. This week the defense was a little bit better. And this was a little bit more of what we saw the first, 5 or 6 weeks of the season from Kansas City. Yeah, I don't know, this Raiders team, man. They stuck around, but they fell behind in this one, and they ended up having to lean on Derek Carr. They lost Amari Cooper to the ankle injury, re-aggravated it early, and this was just an ugly game for the Raiders, one that they needed, and obviously they did not get, but... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about either of these teams. I guess you can sort of be optimistic about the Chiefs at this point.
Well, sure. I mean, they're leading their division still, so you can be optimistic about them. I'm a little disappointed in the Raiders. I was intrigued watching their defense. I'm a big John Pagano fan. I think he has been, and I know coaches in the NFL feel this way. Some of them, I haven't asked every single one, but guys that had to play against him regularly, he's one of the best in-game scheming defensive coaches in the NFL, just defensive play callers. And it has shown the last few weeks. Coming into this game, the Raiders look like a whole different defense. And to have this happen today against a team that knows him well, they also know Pagano because Andy Reid's coached against him when Pagano was with the Chargers in the AFC West all those years. To see them have this kind of performance is a little bit disheartening because I was thinking this Raider team, at least defensively, was starting to come around.
Yeah, and look, as far as the Chiefs go, yeah, as we said, they're leading the division here, and let's go into topic number seven real quick.
Number seven.
Chargers. Another win for the Chargers here. That's four in a row. They are tied with the Chiefs at 7-6. These teams will go at it Saturday night. We have a Saturday game.
Isn't that great? They take away the one weekend night that we can kind of avoid the NFL, so most of us.
Yeah, I don't know.
I used to love those Saturday games. I loved them all until I started watching everything on film, and now it's like, oh my gosh, Saturday, get done at 5 o'clock. You feel like you should be watching a new game. They start the very next weekend up already.
But, yeah, I don't know how to break it. One. I don't know how to break it to my family that I'm gonna have to watch football on Saturday night again. But
did you watch the Christmas games last year? What'd you do Christmas Day?
That's a really good question. I wasn't writing the freak out column last year, so I didn't have to. I could have very well taped games or watched them on Game Pass the next day. I can't remember because we didn't tape that day. We taped on the 26th, right?
We did not tape. I remember we didn't tape that night because I got home and I wasn't going to watch. I actually watched the Christmas Eve game Christmas night. I avoided hearing everything the next day. And so I got home and watched like three games in a row, which is like a full Sunday slate, like three windows of football. And I could barely stay awake for the Chiefs and Broncos. That was like 2 a.m. my time. We would have taped after that. There's no way we did it. I wouldn't have been awake. So we must have taped in the morning then.
That sounds right.
Did you watch it? You're on the East Coast, so this is hard for you.
We're East Coast. I mean, look, on top of that, we do. I'm half Jewish. My mother's Jewish, so we do the Hanukkah thing. We have Christmas coming up. My son's birthday is a couple days before Christmas, so it's a complete train wreck around here.
To add another
night of football is not ideal.
Do you, if you're half Jewish, and this is a totally ignorant question, do you do four nights of Hanukkah then, because if you're only half Jewish, that is the best of all, because you get 8 crazy nights, as our friend Adam Sandler would say,
yes.
Plus you get Christmas. So half Judaism is such a great avenue if you're a kid growing up, and I'm just wondering if anyone regulates that to make it like 4 nights, so it's not 9 days of presents, because that's
like they come knocking on the door and take 4 of your nights of presents away,
or just they didn't present them in the first place. And then the question would be, what do you like? If there's full Jewish family members around, do you watch them on the night that you're not opening presents? I don't know how any of it works. What do you do?
No, we did all 8 nights when I was a kid. I do 0 nights now because my wife is 0% Jewish, and I was just kind of like, yeah, we'll do whatever. We don't have to learn the prayers and whatnot.
So you don't get 8 nights of prayer. But it impacts your football watching, you said.
It does, because we also my mom throws a big. That's the one thing we do. My mom throws a big Hanukkah party, so it's like a second Christmas.
Yeah, gotcha. Wow, that would be fun. That'd be a lot of fun.
It's something. I don't know if fun is the word. It's one more thing to put on the schedule. Anyways, Chargers and Redskins. Washington, I thought, you know, their tackles were healthy again. I thought they might be competitive in this one. They were not. But the Chargers are also just really good now. Gosh, that start for them.
Do we start talking Phillip Rivers MVP at any point? I don't think he is, but he's got to be in that conversation right now, doesn't he?
Yeah.
If he plays the way he has the last couple weeks, he plays that way the rest of the year. He'll played half the season as arguably the league's most impressive quarterback.
I think he is firmly in the top 5 right now if you're doing your ballot. I mean, look, Brady's going to win it, and I think we've both been saying this all year. It's Brady and then it's everyone else. And it's fun to say, like tonight, oh, Antonio Brown, he's in the conversation. Well, sure, but he's in the conversation for second place at this point. And that's only because Wentz is also out.
View it that way, though. Do you trust the voters? I don't know if I trust voters and voting mentality.
I don't know.
How many times has Bill Belichick won Coach of the Year? Bill Belichick doesn't win Coach of the Year, and we all agree he's the best. But when it comes time to sit down and cast your vote, you feel like, well, I got to be smart. I got to like prove that there's a reason I have a vote. I better put some thought into this. And you overthink your way out of picking Belichick. Just like Michael Jordan didn't win MVP, he should have probably had 10 or 12 in his career.
I could be wrong on this, but I feel like NFL voters don't get sucked into the narrative like they do in other sports. You know, this isn't like baseball where you somehow convince
baseball,
yourself.
Everybody,
the
I think I've got a baseball vote.
Is,
right. Yeah. No, everybody gets a vote in baseball. So, it's, yeah, of course it's mass-minded kind of nonsense.
It's a birthright for all American born boys. At some point, someone will give you a spot on their MLB MVP or
but
National League or American
NFL,
MVP ballot.
Yeah. AP NFL where there's 50 voters. I feel like it does have a mass-minded thing.
I can't remember.
I think if Wentz had not been hurt, I think he would have been a shoo-in for MVP this year because he's kind of the smart, intellectual, different voter. You put some thought into it.
It's new. Yeah, it's just like it's not fun to vote for Brady. Yeah. It's fun to vote for a new guy. Fun to talk about him. Anyways, yeah, River. Sure, yeah, he's on the ballot. Just no one can touch. I mean, really, Wentz could barely touch Brady. But now it's obviously if Wentz is going to miss the rest of the season, it's Brady, and then we're just talking about who else would be number two on your ballot. They don't even do ballots.
I'd have Rivers.
I think
I'd have Rivers in there. I'd have Rivers in that conversation now.
Rivers
and
Antonio
I would have Antonio Brown in it. Yeah.
And probably Russell Wilson still up there, even though he had three picks today. But this Chargers team, I mean, look, this is, for all intents and purposes, it's a division championship game coming up on Saturday night. And, I mean, historically, you figure the Chargers of all teams will figure out a way to lose it, but... Man, they are playing really well right now.
Number 8.
Packers, Browns, and the Browns, I don't know. I don't know how they figure out a way to lose these games. They're up 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter against Brett Hundley, and they figure out a way to lose this one. So real quick, we got to talk Packers very briefly. Aaron Rodgers sounds like he's set to come back next week. Packers are sitting at 7-6. It gets interesting if they can win out. It's a tough schedule down the stretch for the Packers, but Hundley, for all the ups and downs and everything that went on there, he kept them in it. Now they have to go to Carolina, and then they host the Vikings, and then they finish up in Detroit. And they need 3 wins with Aaron Rodgers possibly back under center. So the Packers suddenly just got very interesting again. They can't play defense, but they have Aaron Rodgers.
There's your formula, and now we talk the Browns real quick. And I'm fine with the John Dorsey change. I'm fine with it. Here's the problem I do have, though. We never did learn what the Moneyball impact was with the Browns, right? Is it the way they allocate draft picks and spending? Because if it is, I think that's just smart football. And you could probably say a lot of teams have been doing Moneyball, quote unquote, for years. Or were they using it to analyze players? And if they're using it to analyze players, I think they are absolute fools and deserve to go 0-16 every single year. But if that's what they were doing, we all said at the front, you got to give that 4 or 5 years to try to work. That's not just an overnight fix. And I don't agree with the decision, but that's the decision. And I agree with sticking down the path that you're going to commit to. If it's a unique, someone's got to try it, I guess. That's how they felt. Yep. If that's the path they had gone down and they're abandoning it, then shame on them. I mean, that's embarrassing. If they're not going down that, and Paul De Podesta, who's still there right now, his job is just to analyze resources, then this is a very smart move to get John Dorsey in there, because I guarantee you this, John Dorsey's not doing the Moneyball stuff. He's not going to look at your analytics and your bar graphs and have those tell him who can play and who can't. He's an old-school football guy.
Yeah, and look, the criticism of Dorsey in Kansas City and the reason he sort of got nudged out possibly is he did not manage the cap well. I mean, that's why they had to get rid of Jeremy Maclin last summer. They were right up against it, and that was a problem for them. They have something like $108 million in cap space going into next offseason, so he can't, even if he tried, he couldn't run up against the cap, at least anytime soon. We'll see what he does long term. But my whole thing again was...
Too.
Draft picks too. Ton of draft picks. My whole thing was, you were sour on this right away, and I said, well, you can't be that sour on it. I mean, obviously they got it, they let the football guys understand and got everyone on the same page and let them know, like, hey, this is what we're doing. It's gonna be a long term thing. By all reports, clearly that did not happen. Clearly Hugh Jackson was very upset with the way this was going from a personnel standpoint, and that led to this whole power struggle, and Hugh is around, and we'll see how it goes if they go 0-16, but he's there right now, and it just seems like this was a ill-conceived plan by the Browns ownership, if you can believe that. That's what it looks like from afar at this point.
I don't think people outside of football realize how few of true football guys will ever buy into the analytics the way we perceive them to be. The grading and that kind of thing, and the quantifying of film study, it's not going to be bought into by football guys. I mean, we are so far away from that still. And it's such a fine line. It's hard to do. And anything that takes judgment, that's where it's going to run into problems. So if you go into Hugh Jackson's office, you say, well, we had this guy graded out by, you got a 3.2. Hugh Jackson's not going to give a crap what you're talking about. Now, if you can go in and say, and this is like Pro Football Focus, I think one of the best stats I've heard all year, and this is a big deal. The Browns safeties, for example, have played with an average depth of 18 yards off the line of scrimmage, which is the most in the league. That's great information. That's very different than grading, though. And if it feels similar, but to football guys, that is a very, those are two, that's black and that's white. And you want the information, you don't want the interpretive information. And that's what you have to work with, and that's what they still probably need to figure out in Cleveland. And let's hope that, I'm sure John Dorsey got answers to those questions before accepting the job, because yeah, his name was on other shortlists for GM jobs too. Mm-hmm. He probably had his pick.
Yep. And just real quick, Albert Breer did a good piece on analytics in the NFL and how a lot of teams use them. If you want to look that up with the old Google, you can find that from last summer, our Smarter Football Week. But yeah, the one look, I'll just say real quick. It's not an original strategy to say, let's collect draft picks and let's get a lot of draft picks. The Patriots did it. The Cowboys did it under Jimmy Johnson. Everyone does that. Everyone tries to get a lot of draft picks. The one thing that stood out to me looking at the Browns and the way they functioned the last couple of years, they set very hard lines with their own free agents. And it led to a lot of good players walking away. And you can say, okay, they didn't overpay, but they also... they didn't do a whole lot of good with the money that they ended up saving. They you know, they got Kenny Britt, they got that second round pick for the Osweiler salary dump, and meanwhile, you know, Alex Mack leaves because he's asking for too much, even though they have plenty of salary cap room. He's asking for too much, and Tayshaun Gibson and Terrell Pryor, who was really coming along nicely in that system. So that's the one thing that stood out as different to me from afar.
Yeah, the guys that they did have who could play well, they did not keep.
Very hard line, even though they have plenty of cap space. Didn't make a lot of sense to me. Anyways, we'll see how it plays out. They got a good football man in there, and he's got lots of resources to work with, so maybe they accidentally did something good.
Number nine.
Topic number nine, Andy. The lightning round.
Oh, great, lightning round.
only 2 hours of show to go. Bills Colts in the snow. This game was awesome. It was fun
know,
to
man.
Watch.
I watched every snap of this game, and I felt the first half. I felt like I was cheating. Like I didn't have to write anything down for my notes. I didn't have to pause or rewind any plays. There were times I caught myself looking away. At one point, I went and got my lunch and didn't pause it. I just kept it running, which I haven't done in years. It was hand the ball off. You know what though? And here was, I think it was the wind and the first, I wasn't there and they didn't mention the wind though complicates it. When it gets snowy like that, remember the Patriots and the Raiders at the Tuck Rule game? Mm-hmm. Remember New England threw the ball all night in that one? And you think, well, hand the ball. There are people who believe you actually throw the ball when it gets snowy and you run different routes. You do stuff that doesn't require guys to stop and start their feet because that's where you get into the trouble with snow. So you run crossing patterns all game or post routes or fly routes, stuff that keeps guys on the move. And it felt like these teams kind kind of figured that out a little bit in the second half and started to do it, but it was so windy that I don't know if they could even get into that. It was both snowy and windy, and that's what made it a non-game, and it's fun if it happens once every 5 years, which it kind of has. Last time was what? Mm-hmm. The LeSean McCoy against the Lions in the Eagles
game.
Oh,
right, yeah.
He dominated that one as well. And here he ran. He looked different. He ran better than everyone out there. He is good in snow. Don't know why, but he is. If this happens 3 or 4 times a year, though, I think the NFL would start to look at, hey, what can we do to postpone or reschedule games? Because it's not even close to the same game out there. It takes away all the fun of it.
I don't think they're getting to a point where they're postponing it. Maybe if it was a no, they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't postpone games for weather unless it was like endangering fans or something like that.
I know. Yeah, you're right. It's such a different product, though. It's so different.
It is.
I mean, there's no point in analyzing anything because some guys might play fine in the snow, others might not. And what are you going to do about that?
I'll just say the Vinatieri extra point was neat. The one that he curved in and the Bills were celebrating because they thought he missed it by 20 feet and then it just hooked back in with the wind. And when Deonte Thompson made that catch in overtime that ended up setting up the winning score, I thought he was in the end zone. I thought that was the end of the game.
Then
they were like, and the Bills on the 26. And I was like, oh, all right. That's why that was such. That's why that was such a subdued celebration.
You know, well, that is the fun of it. It's almost like a Pee Wee game where any kind of meaningful gain feels like, oh, that could be it right there. That's it. They just sealed this thing. They just moved the chains twice in a row. They've won the field position battle for the rest of the game. Everything did have a heightened significance in the game. I'll give you that. But I don't want to see more than one blizzard game a year. Maybe two. Maybe if they're non-playoff teams. But I don't know. This was okay to watch for once.
All right. Jimmy Garoppolo throws for 334. He is 4-0 as an NFL starter. 49ers, another win here. They go down to Houston and get one. What do you think of Garoppolo so far?
Yeah, here's the thing to like about him. Everything's very compact. There's an efficiency to the way he plays and to the way he moves. And that is a great, great trait, and that has that's an upside type of trait.
Yeah. And by the way, Tom Savage goes down in this one. There will be a discussion about the concussion protocol this week because it seemed to have failed. Savage took a horrible hit and looked like he may have suffered a seizure on the field, and then he was back on the field next drive. So that will be a storyline this week. Giants and Cowboys. Sean Lee was back. Big game for Dallas. This was a close game until the fourth quarter, and the Cowboys just started pouring it on. Landon Collins got hurt. Cole Beasley made a big play. Witten caught a touchdown. So this was a nice win for Dallas, and they are about to get Ezekiel Elliott back in the lineup two weeks from now, I should say.
Just in time. That's kind of their Aaron Rodgers. So they're in the same position. They're 7-6, and they're trying to get a big stretch run here at the end.
They are. Lots of good guys coming back at this point. Let's see. We had the Lions and the Bucks. Lions staying alive here. They got Matthew Stafford. Did not miss this game with a hand injury, and it looked like it wasn't really affecting him either. But they end up having to come back. The Bucks came back on them, and then the Lions get the field goal late, and the Lions are staying alive here. Bucks are still figuring out how to lose games at home.
Probably it for Dirk Cutter, don't you think?
It's too bad.
I liked her. I mean, I like him personally, but I like him as a coach, and he just has the feel of a coach who's going to get fired.
It does. Well, let's go on to Bengals Bears. This was, you know, and Collinsworth mentioned it, and you know, Steelers Bengals coming off that Monday night game, that physical Monday night game, took a lot out of them. Steelers obviously end up getting the win. Bengals were just, I mean, they were atrocious in this game. 33-7 Chicago. This one was in Cincinnati. Mitchell Trubisky, a nice game. Jordan Howard just ran all over them, and Bengals are they're pretty much done in this one. And look, Marvin Lewis contract is up. He might be heading toward retirement at this point.
Yeah, my feel is that the Marvin Lewis tenure has run its course, and it's been a nice tenure, probably a little bit underachieving when you consider they didn't get far in the playoffs, but a respectable organization there, and maybe I might be wrong. Maybe they'll keep him around, but it feels like now would be a good time to make a change. And I don't know if the Bears or what they're planning to do. I know Bears fans, I guess they're kind of thinking, hey, maybe us for a new coach too. I would pump the brakes on that a little bit, though. I'm higher on the Bears than a lot of people. I know it's not translating to wins, not like they did today as much overall, but I think the Bears are in a better spot than their record indicates.
Yeah, I mean, they have the defense, and it's just a matter of, you know, is Trubisky the quarterback? No signs that he's not. They just got to get some weapons around him, so we'll see how it goes. They have the run game, too, so... Broncos-Jets, that was our last game here. Josh McCown breaks his non-throwing hand. Bryce Petty had to come in on this one, and Bryce Petty is exactly as you remember him. But this was Broncos breaking that lengthy losing streak, 23-0. And if you had predicted this game back in August, 23-0 sounds about right. 23-0 Broncos.
Yeah, good call. Josh McCown's had a great season, by the way.
Yeah.
A really professional quarterback, and his numbers have been good. He's made plays in structure, out of structure for him. I was kind of glad to see this one was a blowout because I stayed up late on last night, watching the Broncos-Dolphins because we've got our holiday party for MMQB this week. So I've got to fly over to New York. I actually got the film uploaded on my iPad here as we're speaking. So I'll have stuff to watch on the plane. But long story short, Gary, it takes so long to do everything in New York. I'm going to have to miss at least one game next week, and I've already decided I'm not watching the Jets and the Broncos on film. It has no playoff implications, and that's why I watched the Broncos-Dolphins, so I'm not going to miss them twice in a row. So sorry that McCown got hurt, but Alan Oy, my charter, Jackson Maggini, they're going to do this one for me.
There you go. Little minor league game charting, I guess.
And then you and I can go out for a drink after the parties. I won't have to feel like I need to get back to my room to watch the Jets film.
Nice. There we go. I might stay in the city this year, too. Too long.
Oh, yeah. I said that. I remember. Oh, that's right. Gary drives home. Gary and Liz drive home after the party every year. It's a two-hour drive from Manhattan to your house. 90 minutes, as you make clear, when you go home in the middle of the night when no one's there. It would be nice if you stayed in the city so you could remain with the party.
But then we have the early morning Wednesday meeting. So instead of getting home at 1 a.m.
and setting
my alarm for 5 hours later, I think I'm just going to send the wife home and just get a hotel room in the city this year. That's my holiday gift to myself, my Hanukkah gift to myself, if you will, even though it's still
you stay there. How many nights are you staying? You're going to stay 8 nights, a week in the city?
Honey,
it's Hanukkah. I mean, respect my background, please.
I'm about an eighth Jewish at this point, so I think one night should do it.
Number 10.
Topic number 10, the weekly awards. Offensive player of the week. Do you want to go first, Andy?
I'll go LeSean McCoy. I was thinking about those Steelers guys, but I'm going to go LeSean McCoy. He created a lot of yards, and on his game-winning touchdown, Richie Incognito had a big-time block at the point of attack, too.
I was going to go LeSean McCoy with the assist to Richie Incognito. Let's both give it to LeSean McCoy.
All right. Really? You want? Okay. All right.
Yeah, let's just do that, because I already had it written down. I figured you'd go with someone else, because you hated that game in the snow.
I enjoyed the game for one time. I don't want to do another one, though.
Defensive player of the week.
Defensive player of the week. Who do you have written down?
I have Mario Addison for the Panthers. Again, Vikings banged up front. Panthers front four was especially disruptive in this game. And Addison's a guy we don't talk about a whole lot. A little bit overshadowed on that defense, but he was there. He was making big plays today. He had a strip sack that led to a touchdown and a big game for him.
I'm going Chandler Jones, who I believe now after today leads the league in tackles for loss and sacks, and not combined. Like, he leads in each category, if I'm not mistaken. He certainly leads tackles for loss over the last couple of years combined. Well, you know, when he gets these big plays, he does this stupid windmill gesture. He's like revs up with his big arm, or, you know, spins it around. The other day, I got annoyed watching. He was so good, and I found myself rooting for the other team because I didn't want to see Chandler Jones do his stupid celebration anymore. He had like 8 of them in the first half. This game, he probably had 4 or 5 windmilly type plays. I'm sure he's got a different name for it. Anyway, I have to give my. I don't like the celebration, but he's had a lot of chances to use it. I got to give my credit to Chandler Jones there for the Cardinals.
Good old Will Windmilly Jones. Special teams player of the week. Andy, do you
Vinatieri. Have anyone? Vinatieri in the snow.
Okay.
I'm taking it seriously this week.
That was neat. It was a really cool kick. I'm giving it to Justin Tucker, but only for his kickoffs. Really only for
That's that one weird kickoff.
That one kickoff that happened to, like, bounce at the two and somehow die at the one. That was awesome.
Yeah, I fast forward and I saw that Martavis Bryant had returned it to like the eight, and I didn't know what he did.
That was dicey. That was almost like the Travis Benjamin safety on a punt return, because Bryant scooped it up off the one.
Is that a different play? Is that okay? So this is the same play.
Yeah. No. You remember the Travis Benjamin turning the punt return into safety?
Yeah. Well,
England.
I never saw it. I remember it happened.
This was so Bryant was waiting in the end zone for the ball, and it just died at the 1 yard line. So he had to scoop it up, but he started to go backwards. So he went back into the end zone and was like 2 yards deep in the end zone. And one of those, who was it? I can't remember who was it. What are the offensive players who covers kicks for them? Sort of had a chance.
You don't care either. You don't care either.
I know. I noticed while I was watching, I was like, oh, that dude could have had a safety on a kickoff. Bryan actually got it out to the nine, which was phenomenal. And when he got out to the nine, Justin Tucker made the tackle.
All right, there you go.
True story. Coach of the week, who do you have?
I'm going Sean McDermott, because I wrote down, I don't criticize coaches very often because there's so many factors that go into their decision. And watching the game, he punted in overtime. And there was 4:41 left in overtime, I think it was, when he punted. And I typed in my notes, like, a major mistake, horrible decision. This will be the kind of thing he learns from.
Yep.
Yeah, because the way the game is flowing, they need, because a tie does nothing for Buffalo. That effectively is a loss for them, given the playoff situation. And the way the game was flowing, the possessions were lasting so long because it was a running play on every snap. So I didn't think they'd get the ball back. I was wrong. I mean, it worked out perfectly for McDermott, and that's why he's a head coach, and that's why I get to sit here and write about which head coaches should be hired and fired and kind of get listened to, but not really.
They listen to you on Sean McVay. I'll just say that. My coach of the week is Gus Bradley. Bit of a lifetime achievement award for his work this year, but early on, they were having some issues. I thought this was going to be maybe an underachieving group that sort of collapsed and play up to their potential, but they have been, and they were utterly dominant today. They just gave up the one touchdown. It was a defensive touchdown. It's pick six at the end of this game that made it 30-13, but they completely overwhelmed Washington to the point where, Jake Rudin was ready to take off like midway through the third quarter. They were ready to pack it in and go home. So Gus Bradley, nice work with that Chargers defense this year. And that's a show.
All right. Love it. Yeah, good show. All done.
Really good football this week. And meaningful for football.
It's getting good. It's too bad about the injuries, but I guess that's how you move along, and that's why coaching's important. You have to adjust.
All right. Well, thanks as always to producers Shelby Royson and Lou Pellegrino, as well as editor Chris Basil of Cadence 13. Those guys really are the best. They always make us sound good. But most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. We just can't believe you stayed this late and listened to all our nonsense. Andy and I want to hear from you. Tell us what to talk about. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you hate. We're both on Twitter, Andy_Benoit, GGremling_SI. We're also both on Facebook, or talkback at themmqb.com if you want to email. Also, if you like the show, leave the iTunes review. We talked about that last week. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this show, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.